The president talks infrastructure today. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. President Trump will be speaking in Ohio later today at an engineering training facility to tout his infrastructure plan, a plan the White House had hoped would be passed by the end of the year, but that has stalled in recent weeks. Diane Swonk is chief economist at the accounting firm Grant Thornton. Diane, what are you expecting from the president today?
Well, we will see that the president talks about the infrastructure program, which was not in the recently passed very large $1.3 trillion spending plan, the continuing resolution that was ratified and signed by the president on March 23rd. So the chances of adding more at this stage of the game are very, very low. And he also tends to focus, what the administration is focused very much on, is public-private partnerships to get this done and leverage the dollars more, hoping that they don't have to pay as much. That is a good plan in theory. In reality, ironically, it's worked much better abroad than it's worked in the United States.
And a lot of infrastructure spending comes from local governments, so it's dependent on the health of state and local economies, not just what's happening in Washington.
Exactly. $3 or $4 on infrastructure spending comes out of state and local budgets. And one of the things that is also a problem with the infrastructure plan is its inconsistency with the tax cuts. The tax cuts penalized, as we know, very high tax states where you can't deduct your state and local tax burdens now on your federal income taxes. That raises the cost for those states that actually need the most infrastructure, the cost of borrowing and the cost of getting more funds into those states to fix infrastructure that has gone bad, let alone upgrade it, which we desperately need. So there's an internal inconsistency between the proposals the president is making and the tax cuts he also advocated.
Diane Swonk, chief economist at the accounting firm Grant Thornton, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
It's been about a week since hackers shut down many of the city of Atlanta's municipal computer systems. The computers are back on, but operations are not back to normal. Courts can't take payments. Some utility bills can't be paid online. Police are having to use pen and paper. Joining us with an update is Emily Curitan. She's a reporter at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Emily, good to talk to you.
Nice to be here, Sabri.
So we're now about a week into this situation. Do you have a sense of how much this is costing the city?
We do not have concrete figures from the city. However, municipal court cases, things like that, have been rescheduled for a full week now. Police officers are taking their reports with pen and paper, and the city's been unable to process water payments. The Department of Housing is not able to issue disbursements. So we're going to see a cascade of effects from this.
Do we have an idea of how this malware was introduced, how it got into the city's computer system in the first place?
Officially, that has not been released. We do believe that the malware was introduced remotely. And in many ways, the group that's been associated with and identified as a cyber attacker is known as SamSam. Their signature ransomware exploits unupdated aspects of the city system. So rather than malware where, say, an employee might inadvertently release it by opening an email attachment, this ransomware is able to find weaknesses from unupdated software, as in Microsoft.
The ransom demanded by these hackers is $51,000. Is there any debate about just paying it?
According to Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, everything was on the table. However, SamSam's signature style is to give people or organizations that it attacks 7 days to pay. That would have expired this morning. So it's not clear if the city paid or still can pay. We haven't gotten word on that yet. We do know that the payment portal was publicized by a local TV station and that the hackers received so many messages from the public because of that, that they actually disabled it. So it's not clear that the city could have paid even if they wanted to.
So I imagine that it provides a lesson to other cities around the country.
I would bet that other cities around the country are updating their cybersecurity infrastructure right now. I would hope they are. It came out day before yesterday that an internal audit warned the city of Atlanta of grave weaknesses in their information technology infrastructure months before this happened. No action was taken on the findings of this audit. It said that the city had no formal processes to deal with cybersecurity weaknesses and that city employees didn't have the resources they need to keep their information secure.
Emily Curitan is a reporter at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Emily, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Sabri.
Today is opening day for Major League Baseball. For the first time in 50 years, all of the teams are playing their openers on the same day. But it will not be the first time that fans skip work to catch the games. Marketplace's Renata Sago reports.
It's gone! Yes!
For baseball fans, opening day at the ballpark means an introduction to the players. It's the season's first taste of a stadium hot dog, and for some, a sick day from work. John Challenger heads the executive hiring firm Challenger, Gray & Christmas.
Usually, if the game's a night game and it goes late into the night, then you see people taking off the next day or the next morning.
In an online survey last year, Harris Poll and StubHub asked more than 2,200 people if they'd be willing to make up an excuse to skip work or school for opening day. Nearly a quarter said they would. Edward Yost with the Society for Human Resource Management says fewer people, though, are willing to take off beyond the season opener.
Day two of the season doesn't have quite the celebration.
He says some employers, small and large, have started melding major sporting events like opening day into work culture to keep employees in-house. One example? Showing live games from the office TV. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
And I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.